Spokane, Mr. Mark Mickelson.
Well, good afternoon to everyone. I brought a lunch today in case the split went overtime, just to be safe. I'd like to send a special greeting back to Spokane, those who are listening on the internet. We had 8 inches of snow yesterday in Spokane, and then about 10 o'clock last night it started to rain. And because it was Christmas Day with no snow plows out, the cars packed all that snow down nice and tight, and then the rain came in and then it froze. And it was just a skating rink. I think Perry Miller had been praying for that because he was responsible there for services, but he seemed willing enough to consider it an act of God, and he canceled church. So I had to come down here just to go to services, so that's why I'm here. I almost forgot to check my lunch. Imagine that this can is your physical potential in this life. And I'd like to make an illustration to try to help you keep it in mind. Let's say in this life you decide that you're going to smoke and puts a little dent in your can. Now, if you put a small dent in your can, if you're careful, you can probably get it back out. Let's say you said, well, let's see, I started smoking in the fifth grade. I quit in the seventh. We used to keep the cigarettes between that little metal thing on the bicycle, right between the frame. There was two halves. That's where I kept mine. In the seventh grade, I decided I would quit because someone said it would stunt my growth. So isn't that amazing? That can pops right back out, and all you got is a little tiny crease. Now, that's not too bad. Now, let's say that as you get older, you decide, well, I think I'm going to drink and drive. Somehow, putting down a pack of cigarettes is not quite the same. Now, you got a little more serious problem, a little more risk. But I'll bet chances are, if you're careful, you can imagine what that car sounds like drinking and driving. But you can salvage most of your can. Now, that used to be a 12-ounce can, and now it's a 10-ounce can, but you still get quite a bit of pop in there. There's still a lot of potential in your life, even if you made a little mistake. So just because you make a mistake doesn't mean life's over. It just means maybe you've crushed your can a little bit, and the potential that was once there isn't all there anymore, but it's still pretty good. Now, let's say you do something really serious, like talk back to Mr. Luker or something. Imagine that, you know? Now, this can just tore, and I don't care what you did, you can't weld it, you can't fully repair this can, and you might be able to put a couple of ounces in it. Now, maybe you just went over the edge and crushed your can, and there's no way to fully restore it. Now, I'd like to tell you that that's not really a problem. It'd be nice that crushing your can isn't really a big issue, but it's not true. Because you just don't go out and restore your potential in this life. You have a full potential, and then you can chip away at that. You can waste it. You can use it. You can crush it. And it doesn't return. It's just not as simple as that. It doesn't come back. I used to visit a lady, Louise Fritsch. She was a widow. She was 89 years old. And she had been in the church for a long time, since the 1950s. And I used to love to visit with her. And she told me a story one time. Her husband never did approve of the church. And so the first time she went to the feast, he wouldn't give her permission to go. And so she packed her suitcase. And then when he was busy or occupied doing something else, she went into the bathroom and crawled out the bathroom window. She lived on a farm in Nebraska, out in the farm country, crawled out the window with the suitcase and walked 10 miles to get a bus to catch to the feast, left him a note, "Hi, see you when I get home. You know, the butter's in the fridge." I don't know what she said, but 10 miles, then caught a bus and came back. And, you know, she didn't know when she came back what was going to be. But I guess he missed her and he took her back and life went on. But when I used to sit with her, we were there in her farmhouse, and she would bake fresh bread. And, boy, I just loved visiting. I used to visit her more than any of the widows because she had a lot of fresh bread. And she'd pull a loaf out and slice it. We'd sit at the table and lather it up with butter and sit there and talk, and she'd tell me stories about her life. She'd tell me about how hard her life had been and how many babies had been stillborn because of milking and chores during pregnancy and all she'd gone through. And she would sit there and show me things that she had made in her life. When she died, her children really didn't want any of the things that she had made. And they had a big auction, and they just sold off everything in the house. And I couldn't believe it, because I was so, I mean, I had fingered and touched and looked at so many of the things that she had worked on. And I was busy the day they had the auction. I couldn't be there, and I asked a church member to please go buy for me. And the church member went by and bought for me some of the tatting and some of the crocheting that she did. It's hard to see this, but you can imagine that somebody has built that all stitch by hand. I've got a whole bag that they picked up for me at auction, and I keep it there at the house just as a memento, as a reminder of who she was. Do you know what she would talk about, though, as we sat there at her table, now 89 years old? She would say that she regretted that she had never finished school and that she wasn't educated like some would be. Now, we'd say, oh, that's easy, you know, you study at night, you get your GED, you do whatever you want. But you see, she was on a farm, and she had to milk the cows, and she had to work hard, and she never got to turn around and go back. And she also said, and I heard this story maybe 20 times if I heard it once, she said that she regretted that she had married so young, that she was a teenager, and that she really didn't know her husband. And effectively, what she said was that she paid for that for the rest of her life. She was telling me that, in effect, to a percentage, she crushed her can. Like I say, I'd like to tell you, well, just go get a new one. But it isn't so easy as that. She carried those things with her for the rest of her life and kept them mostly to herself. You teens here at the activity, and this is where we've gathered so many together, we've been able to get together here, but you can still travel where you want to. You can still decide where you want to live. You can still choose what you want to do. Your lives are still open. I encourage you, I beseech you, don't crush your can. When I was in Ambassador College, I was a senior, and I met a freshman student who just came in, and we made friends, and he had a girlfriend that he had come to school with, and they both entered school together as freshmen. And before they had come to school, they had talked about marriage, but there was no commitment that was made. Now, at Ambassador College, the emphasis was on finding and making as many friendships as possible to date socially. And so he came to school, and he says, you know, that's a good idea. I like that. I'd like to date socially. She kind of thought it was the pits, because in her mind, this was a wrap, and they were going to be married, and they needed to get some school out of the way and get on with their lives. All through that first year for them was kind of a tug-of-war. And finally, at the end of the year, she became very, very emotional and began to kind of act out in some very dramatic ways, and finally gave him an ultimatum, and she said, it's all or nothing. It's me or it's over. Well, he decided to go ahead. He gave in, and they married. They left school intending to return a year later, but they never did. There was a baby, there were financial problems, there were family circumstances. Years later, I got a letter from him, and he wrote back, and I just want to tell you what's happened in my life over these years. He went through a lot of the different circumstances and the struggles they had faced, and how he had tried to go to school part-time, work odd jobs, talked about struggling at home and some of the circumstances, and then he said in his letter, he says, I realize now that life will never be what it could have been. Can you imagine saying to yourself, life will never be what it could have been? You can't go back. The can never fully inflates. He had partially crushed his can. In the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, there's a passage here that years ago was made famous in song, but everything has a time and a season. And you have to do it in the season. You have to do it when it's time. And the seasons pass and they're over and you can't go back necessarily and do it again. And we have to be sensitive to that. Ecclesiastes 3, to everything there's a season a time for every purpose under heaven. And notice all the things here that it says. There's a time to be born, there's a time to die. You can only do it once, and it happens right then in its order. To plant, to pluck up, to kill. There's a time to kill, there's a time to heal. There's a time to break down and build up. It says there's a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. Tonight's the time to dance, but last night wasn't the time, so you dance when the dance is open. You dance when the door is available to you to walk in, and when it's over, it's done, and you go on with your life. Life rolls by in seasons, and there are certain things you have to do or not do according to its time. It says there's a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. Now is the time to refrain. Time to gain, time to lose. There's a time to sow. I came home this week. I went visiting, had a visit request from a prisoner. And I'd never been there before, so I dressed kind of casually, figuring, well, he'd be casual, I'll be casual. I wore blue jeans. I walked up to the reception area, and she says, you can't visit in blue jeans in the prison. See, all the prisoners wear blue, and they want to know who to shoot, so they didn't want me in blue. So you can't wear blue jeans. I said, are you serious? She said, yes, you'll have. I said, well, can you give me a list of the things so that I know what I need to do when I visit? She says, we don't have a list. I said, well, then how do I know what I need to do when I visit? Well, he's supposed to tell you. Well, he didn't tell me. Well, you'll have to get another pair of pants. So I went to Salvation Army, ran in the door. I'm on a visiting time, real short here. Ran in the door, grabbed the first pair of pants to fit my waist, ran out. Looked like the Noachian flood had just passed through the village. The high water pants, I got boots on. The boots are sticking out the bottoms. I walked back in. She says, nice pants. I said, okay, can I visit now? She says, oh, I'm sorry. There's another little technicality. You can't visit today. I said, I just bought a pair of pants. I just came back. I told you, and now you're telling me I can't visit today. She says, I'm sorry. I paid $2.50 for those pants. So I took them home, and I gave them to my wife, and I said, fix them. Save these pants. So she let all the hem out down and added some sizing to the inside, and they're waiting at home. I hope they work. I worked very hard for those pants. There's a time to sew. You believe that anyone would build a digression that big into a split sermon? There's a time to keep silence. Now is not the time to keep silence, although some might wish. A time to speak, a time of war, a time of peace. Life passes in seasons. Let's say you want a big, juicy bunch of grapes, but you see, the rules are you can't import them from Peru. You have to grow them yourself. Is this the season for juicy ripe grapes? Not at all. You're going to have to wait till next fall. We planted some vines in our backyard. Well, one vine. One vine in our backyard. And we're hoping to have grapes next fall. But you see, that means we're going to have to be there when the time and season is right. And it also means that we had to plant the vine when the time and the season is right. And if you didn't do the one, you don't get the other. Life passes by, and you have to be there in order when it passes. There are also seasons in our lives, and there are different fruit born at different times in our lives, and if we do not plant accordingly, then we will not reap the harvest that we desire. In the book of Galatians, chapter 6, verse number 7, in the midst of a passage that's a reference to finance and support, there's a verse here that on principle I believe can easily stand alone. And it says, Galatians 6 verse 7, do not be deceived. Don't kid yourself. Don't you kid yourself and think that this is not true. It says, God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that also shall he reap. If you crush your can will be crushed, and you can't buy a new one. It is the potential of your life, and you only spend it once. And you have to spend it well. I saw the results of a survey one time that was taken from 95-year-old men and women, people at the end of their lives, and yet still, you know, viable and concerned and participating and wanting to share some of the knowledge that they had themselves received. And they asked him a question: what would you do different if you had your life to live over again? What do you think a 95-year-old person would say if they said, what would you do different if you had it to live your life over again? The first thing they said, the most important thing that came up time and time again, was that they would take more time to really think about what was important in their lives. And the third issue that came up in order was that they would take more risks. And the way I process that is that they would be willing to put more time and energy and resource and personal risk and focus into those things that were most important in their life, and they would take more time deciding what they really were. That they would dedicate their lives more directly toward that which really counted. 95 years old, looking at life from the back end on that side. So then what really is important in this life? What will we value the most in the end? Now, unfortunately, the younger you are, the harder it is for you to truly answer that question. In order to answer that question, it's easier at 95 than it is at 10 or 10 or 15 or 20. You need some life perspective to answer it well. How much can a 6-year-old child tell an infant about going to school? Oh, you just went to school, you know a little bit about going to school. How much can you tell a 2-year-old about what it's like to go to school? How much can a 12-year-old tell a 6-year-old about puberty? Well, you kind of walked in the door there, here we are, now let me explain it to you. And the 6-year-old just looks at you with his eyes rolled back. How much can an 18-year-old tell a 12-year-old about going to work? Well, you just went to work, got your first job. How much can you tell that 12-year-old? Well, the point is, life progresses accordingly. Life experience changes the way you look at things. And so when a 95-year-old, as a body and a group of them, say, you know, I'd really change where I put my focus, it has some meaning. It really does. Sometimes in ways that we would not yet see. Our perspective, what is happening to us, is very important. We were driving south out of Kennewick this morning, and I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention. We'd been on ice, and we were getting out of the ice, and the roads were better. But off to the side, there was 3 or 4 cars through a series that were flipped over and off in the ditch. And then up ahead, there was a fire truck with his lights on. And I was traveling right next to another car in the lane next to me. I'm on the outside lane. And the car was slowing down, and so I slowed down. The more he slowed, the more I slowed. But I kept kind of right on his corner and his tail. And finally, he just kind of came over into my lane and kind of pushed me over onto the shoulder. And I slowed down, and I looked over, and there's a fireman by the truck who's just absolutely livid, angry, shaking his fist. And he comes running across the road, and I roll down my window, and he just yells and shouts at me. He had cones out in the road, and the road went from 2 lanes to 1. And I noticed the truck, and I was following this car, but I wasn't watching for the cone. It was right through my line of vision, And he just absolutely chewed me up and down. You see, me, I'm thinking about, I'm coming down here, we're going to have a good time, I'm going to speak, my mind's somewhere else. And he's here saying, look, I just pulled 4 people out of the ditch, and you're about to put 1 more in. And he was absolutely furious. And then at the end, he says, have a good day. I felt like saying, yes, sir. But you know, it depends on what you're focused on what you will see. Also, if you're going to ask yourself what's really important, you need to be as honest as you possibly can. In the state of Washington, because that's where I'm from at this point, you have to be 18 if you want to vote or buy a smoke. And you have to be 21 if you want to buy a drink. And if you commit a crime before you're 18, you probably won't be tried as an adult because they won't hold you fully responsible. Now, I went in the Army when I was 18, and I went to Vietnam. They gave me a rifle and a bunch of bullets and some hand grenades and said, have fun. And I got back home when I was 20, and I still couldn't sit down and buy fajitas and a beer. And I always thought that was rather strange. But there's also an issue that relates to the church that runs a little bit parallel to this. Now, I think it's just a perception, but some people think it's real. It goes like this. If you're not yet baptized, then you're not yet fully accountable. It's kind of like committing a crime, but you're not 18, so you're not tried as an adult. Well, I haven't made my decision yet, and I'm not really baptized. I've still got plenty of time to decide. There's another phase of that. Well, the sermons and the Bible studies, you know, they're really directed to the adults. You know what could happen in your mind if you're not careful? You could actually come to believe that you're not responsible yet and that you can't actually crush your can. You could actually begin to believe that because someone else isn't holding you accountable, that somehow you can't crush your own potential in this life. How old do you have to be to make a baby? You don't even have to count that on three hands, do you? How soon can you be addicted to drugs? How old do you have to be to sign off in school to tune out? Do you have to wait for an age of accountability, whatever that would be? A good friend of mine in high school, driving down the street one day, a child chasing a ball ran out from between two cars, and he hit the child and he killed him. Nobody stopped and said, how old are you? You're not old enough to be dead. We don't hold you responsible till you're baptized. We don't hold you responsible till you're 18. I'm sorry, you couldn't possibly have done that. There must be a mistake. There was a big mistake, but accountability was right there up at the top. What's really going to be important in the end? The Life Application Bible has an introduction to the book of Proverbs I'd like to read you. It says, Proverbs begins with a clear statement of its purpose: to impart wisdom for godly living. It says the first few chapters are Solomon's fatherly advice to young people. Although most of the material in this section is directed toward young people, all who seek wisdom will greatly benefit from these wise words. The first 9 chapters of Proverbs were specifically written to young people. I guess we could say young people everywhere or young people in the church. I'd like to read you some of the book of Proverbs. And notice what is really important in this life and who this message was written to. Proverbs 1. Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. It says, a wise man will hear and increase learning. He will take into account those who have gone before, and he will consider following in their steps. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but a fool despises wisdom and instruction. And then, sometimes I've heard the comment made, well, I don't know what to do, or I don't know what if this is really that important, or I'm not sure what's right. And yet it's amazing, verse 20, it says, wisdom calls aloud outside. Hello, here I am. It's not like choosing between right and wrong as some hidden course. It's not like, well, I can't understand it because that sermon, that was directed toward the adults. It says, hello, here I am. She raises her voice in the open square. She cries out in the chief concourses. At the openings of the gates of the city, she speaks her words. Solomon wrote and said, you know, wisdom is there absolutely crying out to be heard, to be listened to be responded to. Chapter 2. My son. You know, I have a son and a daughter, my wife and I, and we look at them, I guess, the way all parents look at their children, and in an incredibly intense and personal way. And I think, boy, would I like to, and am I going to try to teach them to obey this word? My son. Solomon here is just saying, look, as you would take a child and put him on your knee or lap or by your side or your arm around a friend and say, listen to me, please. I went to my brother one time, who's younger than I am, but not in that sense answerable in any way to me, and there was a problem, and I didn't know how to bring it to him, and finally I just went over and I just put my arm around him and I says, brother, please listen to me. And I held him there with my arm, and then I told him what I had to say, and he didn't pull away from me, and he listened. And Solomon's saying, "My son, listen. Listen to me, please. If you receive my words and treasure my commands within you so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver," says, if you will try, if you will look, you're going to see these things. You're going to know what to do. Because wisdom is going to cry out. You have to simply be willing to stop and hear. Verse 6, the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. Chapter 3, my son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. Length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will direct your paths. Have you ever been lost? I mean lost, out in the woods or someplace where you just weren't sure exactly where you had to go? And you just absolutely in your brain cried out for direction, instruction, or a sign, or a signal, or something that you could focus on and follow. God here says, trust me with all your heart. I will direct your paths. I'm crying out. Please listen. Chapter 4. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father. God is our father. And God says, listen to me, please, you children of God. And that doesn't start at the moment of demarcation of baptism. The family of God is all of those God is trying to bring to him to put into that ultimately spiritual and resurrection family of God. Verse 10, hear my son and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I've taught you in the way of wisdom. I've led you in the right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered. When you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Don't let go. Keep her. She is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Don't travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. Let it be. Don't touch it and go on your way. God kind of says, listen, please. Don't you understand that if you stop and touch that, it will be too late? Or maybe it won't be too late for everything. Maybe you just lose an ounce this time. Or maybe 2 ounces. But you only have 12. And nobody can replace your can. Chapter 5. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding. Down in verse number 7, hear me now, my children, listen to me. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her. It's talking about a harlot here, a woman that could be a man. It doesn't matter on that respect. It's saying, flee from a person who is evil, who would cause you to sin. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed and say, how I have hated instruction and my heart despised reproof. I was instructed. I was corrected. I can't believe I didn't listen. God says, listen, please listen. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the congregation and the assembly. Chapter 9 is the last in this section. Chapter 9, verse number 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And for by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. Good years of life. God isn't saying that you'll just get to be 70 instead of 60, but you'll have a quality of life because your potential will be salvaged and used. Real years, not just existence. Real potential. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it. That doesn't mean that nobody else will ever suffer. What it does mean is that you will be the one ultimately who bears responsibility. You will be accountable. I grew up in the 60s. It was the me generation. Out of the 60s came, if it feels good, do it. And of course, we had to qualify that, you know, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. But since we never considered that it would ever hurt anybody, it was just, if it feels good, do it. President Clinton grew up in that same generation. It didn't do any of us much service. I got a girl pregnant, and I walked out the door, and you know what? It felt good for a few minutes. Look at me now. My can seems to be doing just fine, right? I mean, look what I've been able to accomplish, what God has allowed me to do. You ought to look at my son's can, though. Better yet, you ought to look at his mother's can. Take a can for yourself and have an unwed mother bear a child. Now, by God's own grace, we've restored, and I declared paternity, and he took my name, and we have good relationship. His mother and I are friends again as well. But you take a can, and then you take an unwed mother and give birth, and you put a dent in it, you think about that size. And then you get married and divorced and married and divorced and married and divorced, and you put those dents in the can, and then you pop it back out, and you see what your can looks like. So, to say that we do not bear responsibility simply is not true. There was a price. There's a price for all of those things. We must protect the opportunities that we do have in this life, and there are many. But who among us here, whose life in this room lies still yet mostly ahead? It's the teens. It's the youth of the church. You have yet to marry in many cases. You have yet to settle into a career. You all still have, by and large, your health, your strength, and most of you are still in school. Hold on to those opportunities that you have. That is your potential. Make friends. Have fun. Sample your freedom. But listen to me now. Listen to me. Every time you drink a Coke, 7-Up, pop, whatever it is you drink, remember, don't crush your can.